Get Published, Episode 14, for Sunday, October 4th, 2009. Hi there, and welcome to Get Published. I'm your host, Mike Plested. Today's episode is one I've been working to put together for quite a while now. In it, we will be talking about submitting your work. And who better to speak with on the subject than Dragon Moon Press's own editor-in-charge, Gabrielle Harbowie. It's a great conversation, and I think you'll get a lot out of it. I know I did. Thanks for joining me.
Matthew Wayne Selznick had his Sovereign Summer.
J.C. Hutchins gave us Obsidian.
Scott Sigler is building the crypt. The children of Aj are the immortals that can choose to enter the land of Cairn in order to directly affect events in the world.
Some of the children were featured in Murder at Avedon Hill, while others were merely hinted at. Starting September 9th, 2009, P.G. Holyfield, the creator and producer of Murder at Avedon Hill, will bring you the next chapter in the Land of Cairn universe.
Tales of the Children is a podcast anthology that focuses on the history of the land and the children that shaped it. Tales will include new Land of Cairn fiction by P.G. Holyfield and will feature contributions from some of the great names of podcast fiction, including T. Morris, Jack Mangan, Nathan Lowell, Patrick McLean, Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov, and Philippa Ballantyne. But more importantly, if you are a writer, a musician, an artist, or a creator of any kind, then you can take part in the world that the children of Aj have called their playground for thousands of years. Visit pgholyfield.com for details on adding your piece to the puzzle that is the Land of Cairn. Don't delay. On 9-9-09, it all begins. And believe me, you won't want to miss it when the children finally come out to play.
Please hang up and try again.
And now we're on to the feedback section of the show, and I didn't get any this episode. At least, none I could play on the air. I did get a number of comments from other sources, and I just wanted to say thank you to all of those people who have reached out to me on Facebook and Twitter. While I don't always get comments and questions I can play on the show, your feedback and encouragement means so much to me. So thank you very much. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, or FriendFeed, or Facebook, please do so. Just mention you've heard the Get Published podcast so I know where you're coming from. You can Twitter me at mplested, or contact me either via FriendFeed or Facebook at Michael Plested. That's Michael spelled M-I-C-H-E-L-L. And if you have any feedback, comments, or questions, you can also reach me via my voicemail line at 206-339-1258. Or you can also email me at feedback@getpublishedpodcast.com. Whatever method works for you, I encourage you to send me any questions, comments, or feedback. I'd love to hear from you.
Joey Provosky has been thrust into deep space against his will. Aboard the SS Acid Rat, he and the crew are being pursued by the police in an intergalactic chase. But once the delivery is made, Vic, the captain of the SS Acid Rat and owner of V&A Shipping, decides to take a gamble with the crew and their pay. In an attempt to double their money, they need to get a shipment of beer for the celebration of the planet's long-awaited delivery. If they fail, they get nothing. It sounds so simple. Perhaps too simple. Tune into V&A Shipping, a podcast novel by J.R. Murdoch. For more information, please visit ofgnomesanddwarves.com. V&A Shipping, when it has to be there, dead or alive.
Danger. Incoming interview. And I am delighted to welcome Gabrielle Harbowie back to the show. Gabrielle and I had talked in between episodes about some of the things that authors-to-be and fledgling authors need to know about the whole submission process. And it occurred to both of us that a few things like query letters and submission guidelines are kind of a black hole for some people. They don't quite understand it. And Gabrielle, who is editor in charge at Dragon Moon Press, graciously agreed to come back on the show and talk to us about query letters and submission guidelines and all that good stuff. So welcome back to the show, Gabrielle.
Thanks, Mike. It's good to be back. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And I know I tend to talk a lot about, and even more so in this particular introduction, but let's talk about the whole submission process. I know you've been getting probably more familiar with it than maybe you even want to be. But, you know, the submission process, where does it begin? I would say probably with the query letter, but I'll let you kind of talk to that a little bit.
Well, it does begin with the query letter, but I guess an even better place to start than the query letter is whether submissions are open and whether your manuscript fits the publisher that you're submitting to. I think that's an even more important place to start than just sending out a bunch of letters.
Oh, so you don't want to see horror novelists sending to, say, a young adult or, say, a nonfiction press.
Right. Dragon Moon Press doesn't want to see nonfiction or biography or children's picture books or, you know, even if it's good, it's just not the sort of thing that they print. So it's kind of a waste of your time and kind of a waste of their time and that sort of thing. So definitely know what a publisher publishes before you try even finding an address for them. And then find out if they'll accept your submission before you bother finding an address for them. If they say submissions are closed, then submissions are closed. You can wait for them to open again. But, you know, if the door's closed, you're not getting in. So
fair enough. And I don't believe Dragon Moon is a press that will refuse a submission that's unagented. But is that something that is considered at all either?
Well, there are two ways to get a solicited submission in the door, and one way is through an agent, but it's not the only way. You can get referred by an author who writes for that press. You can get you can network with an editor or a publisher and get them interested. There are other ways to get solicited. It's not that it's an agent or nothing. Definitely
right.
Not. But sometimes Dragon Moon's policy right now is sort of by invitation. So it's solicited or referred or whatever you want to call it. You don't need an agent to submit to Dragon Moon, but it's not open submissions either.
Right. And you used one of my favorite words, and I probably use it over and over to excess, and that is network. Authors tend to be fairly introverted, and that whole networking aspect where they come up and say, "Hello, Gabrielle. I am Mike Plested, and I'm a fledgling writer, and, you know, I really wanted to meet you." That's kind of important.
That is important. That is very important. And it's okay. You know, I mean, have some common sense about it and have some class about it and, you know, network with somebody. Don't just walk up to them and hand them a manuscript when they don't know who you are, sort of thing.
No,
but yeah, I mean, if I'm going to a writing convention, it's because I'm there as an editor and I'm there to meet writers and talk to writers and talk to other editors. And certainly I don't mind being approached by writers as long as they approach me in a considerate kind of way.
Right. You don't want to be stalked, in other words.
I didn't catch that. I'm sorry.
I said you don't really want to be stalked too badly, in other words.
Oh, no, no stalking, please. No, no, no. But that's a good point, and it leads into sort of the next step, which is the submission's address. There are still publications that take paper submissions, but I don't work for one of those, and I'm very happy to say that I don't, because my boss is in Calgary, Canada, and I'm in San Francisco, and it would be really, really tough if we had to share a whole lot of paper back and forth. So we use email submissions, and there is a submissions address. It's up on the website. And sending a submission to the submissions address, I mean, it sounds pretty basic and pretty silly, but it's the thing to do. It's the thing to do. Don't send submissions to an editor's personal email address if you don't know them. That comes across as really creepy and stalkery. Don't send to 5 million other potential addresses. Send to the one that says submissions, because I know for me, all my email goes to the same inbox anyway, but it's tagged differently depending on where it comes from. So if you think you're getting in the back door and sending a submission to my personal email, like it's going to get to me faster, it's going to get to me just as fast, but it's not going to have that little label that says submission on it. And I'm going to see email from someone I don't know, and I might not even see it.
Right. And I suppose it might be bad form to email you and maybe another press and a couple other presses and send it to 4 or 5 at a time.
Yeah, you don't. That's not the sort of thing you want to CC on. It's like a cover letter for a job application. You don't want to CC 5 or 6 different people on that. That's just, you know, that's tacky.
And before,
No, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, before we leave the whole idea of submissions, can you talk a little bit about submission guidelines and the purpose of them and why they are what they are?
Okay. In a nutshell, submission guidelines are to keep editors from going blind.
That is nice and concise.
It's as simple as that. Everyone has their favorite format, what's easiest on their eyes, what's easiest for them to read. These are people who are sitting at their desk and reading for 8, 12, 16 hours a day. And it's tough. It's, you know, it's not hard labor, but it's definitely straining on the eyes. And if you have lines packed too tightly together or characters packed too tightly together and too small, it gets hard to see. You strain your eyes. You don't even necessarily really read what you're seeing, because after a while you just kind of zone. So everybody has the font they like, the style they like, and mostly it's the same. Mostly it's you know, Times New Roman or Courier New, double spaced, you know, nice wide margins, easy to read. Some people have slightly different preferences. When you're submitting, learn the guidelines for the particular publisher that you're sending that file to, that email to, that, you know, envelope to, and follow their guidelines exactly. Even if it means that you have to reformat it for every submission, reformat it for every submission. Because, you know, you want to impress these people, please make your manuscript easy on their eyes. If they don't have any guidelines on a particular point, like they don't specify their font size or the number of spaces they want after a period, don't sweat it. Don't go nuts trying to second guess it. It means that that point doesn't matter as much to that particular editor. Just kind of have common sense about it. If they don't list a font size, that doesn't mean that, you know, 24 or 32 point is okay. Please.
Yeah, your 500 page manuscript suddenly becomes 2,000 pages at 32 point font.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. And you get more attention from following the rules than from breaking them. You don't want to break out and be unique on any of these points. The guidelines are there to be followed. They're not there to be played with. They're not, you know, I see a well-formatted, low-maintenance manuscript, and I breathe a sigh of relief, and I say, oh, good. And it doesn't even matter yet what the content is. It's just, I know I'm going to be able to look at it and purple handwriting font, not so much.
Right. Well, that brings on to a really good point. I mean, a lot of people think that they have to do something really unique to be noticed. So what is your thoughts on trying to be unique and maybe gimmicky?
Oh, boy. Well, all editors, I think, say this. And what they say is, don't try to impress me. But I was talking with a friend who's an author recently, and I realized that that's kind of vague, and authors don't really know what that means. And what it means is, don't make it gimmicky. You know, it doesn't mean, you know, don't make it interesting. But it means sort of let the writing speak for itself and don't use any flashy tricks to get our attention. And especially don't think you're the first person to try a trick. You know, it's not like writing a book report for sixth grade where you have to dress up as your main character and give the whole story from their point of view. I don't want to see special fonts. I don't want to see special background colors. All it's going to do is make it difficult for me to read. And you really want to be as low maintenance as possible is what it comes down to. Don't include gifts. That's just creepy. Don't do your query letter from your main character's point of view. I've seen that one. Don't make threats, even veiled or playful ones, about what will happen to the editor or their family or the fate of civilization if we don't accept your manuscript. I've seen that one. And don't overhype yourself. If you try to set expectations too high, you have nowhere to go but down. Don't tell me what a blockbuster hit the movie version will be or how quickly the movie rights will sell or how many awards you'll win. Just show me the text and let me be impressed by what you write.
Well, yeah, I guess if you're that impressive to start with, then you'd probably already be in print and you'd already have 5 million copies out.
Well, in theory, everybody has to start somewhere. So you may be that good and you may not be in print yet, but
yeah.
But yeah, and you know, I've seen all of these things, or at least most of these things. Nobody sent me any presents, and I'm glad. Please don't try. I've heard enough horror stories. But all it does is sort of make you seem less professional, and it lowers credibility. It doesn't actually help you at all. We want, you know, if your writing can't stand out from the crowd in simple 11-point Courier New like everybody else's writing is in, then your writing can't stand out from the crowd.
Right.
You want to focus on making that writing as strong as it can be and not on the bells and whistles, because ultimately those aren't going to go through to the reader in the end. Ultimately, they don't count.
Right. So I guess your message in a nutshell is write well and it'll stand out and you'll see the results of that.
Write well and be low maintenance. Be the sort of person that people want to work with.
Right.
And be the sort of person that people want to read.
Excellent.
Wow, that was
advice.
A really good soundbite. Awesome.
I might have to change my intro and use that. Boy. With your permission, of course.
Wow. I don't know.
That's a good
one. I don't
want
to keep that for myself.
All right.
Yeah. And there's one other note that I have along the same line. And this is sort of a contested one, but in your query letter, personally, I don't like to see a writer comparing their writing to other authors. It's kind of a shortcut and it's a convenient one to say, this book is like if Agatha Christie was written by Douglas Adams or something like that. And it gives you a really clear mental picture, yes. But this is your opportunity to show us your voice and right. How you're unique and not how you're the same as someone else. And there is a place for that sort of comparison, and it's very effective when it's used properly. But in my opinion, that place is on the book cover and in the marketing materials.
Right.
It's not in the query. Well, you know, show me your voice. Show me what you can do. Don't show me how well you do what someone else can do.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to be an amalgam of a few other writers. You want to be a unique individual on your own right.
Right. Exactly. So
can I use that soundbite?
We'll discuss it.
Okay, very good. So yeah. You kind of made a good segue. You know, let's talk a little bit about what the components, the basic components of a good submission would be, starting, I guess, with the query letter.
Okay. I've been doing submissions for Dragon Moon Press for a little while now, and I remember we had talked about this subject when I did my first interview with you, and I didn't feel that I sort of knew the area well enough to to give much helpful advice, but I've seen a lot of submissions since then, and I've learned what a personal process it is for every editor in terms of having preferences and things they like to see and things they don't like to see. So please don't take any of this as, you know, as being global or set in stone, but I think a lot of it is common sense, and a lot of it, even if it isn't exactly how other editors operate, is at least a good start.
Sure.
So with that said, the very first things that I look for when I get a query letter, I scan it to make sure there's a title, a word count, a genre, your name, and your email. And you would be surprised how often some of those things are missing. But before I even want to know what the story is about, I want to know how many words I'm getting and what genre they're in. I don't want to have to wade through multiple chapters to figure out what genre it is or if it's going to fit. I'm not going to. I get too many submissions, and I'm going to go for the ones where it's right up front, not the ones where I'm going to guess. I also don't want to have to dig for your name or your email address. Sometimes things get forwarded. If things get sent to Gwen Gates, who runs Dragon Moon Press, and she forwards them to me, sometimes, for whatever reason, the original email address doesn't make it. Sometimes the email address that I get doesn't work. Okay. Make sure I can contact you, even if the header falls off your email. It's very important. Even worse than being rejected is when a publisher is interested and can't get in touch with you. You really don't want that to happen.
No, that would be bad.
That would stink. And also, don't just send me a link to your website and tell me to check out your work there. If you're serious enough to want to get published, you're serious enough to write a real letter.
Right, right.
So,
well, you know what I'll be doing as soon as we're done the interview, right? I'll be checking my queries to see if I have all those things.
They're very, very important. I think title is important, but word count and genre tell me immediately off the bat if it's going to be a fit. And, you know, please don't lie about it to make it fit. But
right. Yeah, don't call a mystery novel science fiction just because they know that you're interested in science fiction.
Right, because you might get me to open the file, but you'll never get me to open another file you send ever again.
Right.
Because I'll know that I can't trust your word. So those are the most important things, and those things have to be there. And I make a database, actually a spreadsheet. I make an Excel spreadsheet with all the submissions I get, with date and all of that information, and then the date that I reply. And that's sort of my process to keep track of whether I've seen something before and to keep track of how old something is and how long I've let it sit. Right. And sometimes I let them sit and I don't mean to, but it just happens. Life gets in the way. I get busy. But I do keep track of all of that. So having all that information in there from the start is very helpful. Sending it to the right email address so that it can be tagged as a submission so that I know to open it that way and handle it that way is also really important.
Right.
So now we're down to the actual letter.
Right.
And
well, I guess let's talk about that. Are there things that you absolutely don't want to see in your query letter?
There are things that I absolutely don't want to see in a query letter. There are two phrases that I never want to see in a query letter, and they are, I know this isn't the sort of thing you publish, but... And I know you're closed to unsolicited submissions, but...
In other words, they know that they're flying in the face of what you're asking for, but they're going to do it anyways.
Yes. You know, if we're closed to unsolicited submissions and you send me a submission anyway, that's okay. I'm not going to fuss. You know, it's not going to get my priority, but I'm not going to fuss. But if you say, you know, if you contact me, a stranger in a professional capacity, and say, I know I'm willfully disregarding your rules. Don't you want to work with me now? The answer is going to be no.
Yeah, no, I think I can understand where you're coming from.
Yeah. On the whole, though, a query letter has a lot of similarities to a job application letter. It should have a nice business-like greeting. It should have a sort of formal businessy tone. It should have a nice formal closing, that sort of thing.
Right.
It should be really polished in terms of spelling and grammar and punctuation. You know, everyone makes a typo now and then, especially when they're nervous. But if it's clear that you couldn't take the time to spell check and read over what you've written, then A, you're not serious enough about writing to get published. And B, I can kind of predict that your manuscript is going to be in exactly the same condition.
Right.
So spell check it, please.
Now, so we've talked about contact information. We've talked about the fact that the title and the genre and the number of words, and we want it to be professional. Are there any pitches that might work better for you than others? I know I've heard some people say don't ask rhetorical questions as part of your query.
I kind of feel like every writer has their own individual style, and I'm not Nathan Bransford has a post. He's a literary agent based here in San Francisco also, and he has a post on query letters and how to write them, and it's called something like the Query Letter Mad Lib.
Right.
And I don't know if you're familiar with this or not, or if your readers are, but it basically gives you the entire format and just has sort of blanks. You know, this is a story about blank, a blank who does this, this, and this. And it's very sort of formulaic. And he says, don't do this, but this is the information that you need to put in there. And I very much believe that if I give you the blanks to fill in and I tell you the rest of what I want, then that's limiting your own style and your own voice as a writer.
Right.
When your own style and your own voice as a writer is exactly what I want to see.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. No form letters. Do it the way that you think is best. But again, be professional.
Yeah. And that said, a lot of people spend a lot of time talking about the first sentence and how much the first sentence has to grab you. It's exactly the same for your pitch, for your synopsis, for your partial, for any sort of promotional summarizing material that you send. You want it to grab attention. You don't want it to be bland.
Right.
Bland is easy, but give it to me like a movie trailer. I mean, don't make it that long and don't add explosions, please. But you know, and you don't have to start with in a world.
Okay.
But it's that same sort of thing. There's a thing called the elevator pitch.
Right.
And that's really kind of what I want to see first after the intro. The theory behind the elevator pitch is that someone really important gets on the elevator with you, and you only have the length of time until they get to their floor to give them your pitch and get them hooked and get them wanting more. So it's very brief. It's maybe a sentence or two, and that's all you've got to work with. And you've got to hook somebody. You've got to make it interesting. You've got to raise questions that they're going to want to see answered. So you want to address sort of the central conflict. And if there's something unique about the character, the main character, but that's all you've got time for, and you've got to make every word count. That's what I want to see. You know, that's the first summary I want to see on your query letter.
Right.
I want to see this book, you know, with this title, this word count, and this genre is about, and then I want that elevator pitch. I can give you a great example of one.
Sure.
Eric Buchanan, who is a Dragon Moon Press author, his book is Small Magics, and his sequel is going to be Cold Magics. The elevator pitch for Small Magics really blows me away, and it goes something like, this is the story of one young man who has magic in a world where no one else believes it exists, except for the one person who wants to control it all.
Excellent. Yeah.
And instantly, that's the main character, the central conflict, and you're interested in seeing how that develops and how it resolves. You know, if someone says that to you on an elevator, you say, oh, really? Tell me more. And you get off on the same floor with them and keep walking.
Yes. Right.
And, another point to make about this is don't think you're done summarizing your book once you get a contract, because these things are going to keep coming back at you and keep coming back at you, and you're going to need a blurb for the back cover, and you're going to need a blurb for every place you try to promote it and every person you try to sell it to in an elevator.
Well, and I imagine that you have to consider all of the potential audiences that you're going to talk to as well. So tailor your elevator pitch to the audience in question.
Yeah. You may want to play up a mystery angle or play up a fantasy angle or something like that. So it's good to have more than one, but it's an essential thing. And being able to write that and present it concisely says a lot about how concise your writing is as well.
Right. And so we've talked about elevator pitch, and you mentioned synopsis, which is related in a way, but totally different in another way.
A synopsis is a little longer. A synopsis is a little more in-depth look at your plot and how you get from point A to point B and what those points are. I like to see the elevator pitch first. I like to see that really tiny, concise, concentrated idea. And then I like to see a synopsis paragraph or two which explains how you get there. And again, this should be gripping. This should be compelling. This should make me want to read more. Don't just give me bullet points or a summary of every chapter strung together as a paragraph. Make it interesting.
Right. So how long do you, a document do you look for in a synopsis?
It really depends. I actually did a little browsing and reading on synopses, and I found that there are some people who like a couple paragraphs and there are people who like a couple pages.
Right.
So I think I'm going to say the same thing about the synopsis that I say about the manuscript, which is make it as long as it needs to be and no longer.
Right.
You know, give me the gist of the story, this is where you tell me, you know, about the main character and what turns his world inside out and what is trying to stop him from making it right again. Make me care about it. And then tell me how you resolve it. Don't hold the ending hostage and try to make someone sign you to find out how it ends. They're not going to, you know, part of being a good writer is being able to tie up a plot cleanly. So an editor or a publisher is going to want to see that you can do that.
Right.
If you've got a good start and then it all sort of falls apart, then that's going to count against you.
Absolutely.
So definitely show that you have the whole thing planned out, show how it ends. If they don't like how it ends, then that's something they might, you know, it might be a deciding factor. If they really like how it ends, that might be a deciding factor. If they really like everything but how it ends, they may ask you to rework it. But you've got to give them full disclosure and don't do the thing that the movie trailer does in that regard, which is, you know, now you have to see the movie to find out what happens.
Right.
That's what you do with your readers. That's not what you do with your publisher.
Okay. And you mentioned partials. Now, my understanding of a partial is basically you take your manuscript and it's a sample of that, and usually the first three or four chapters.
Right. Right. A sample, if someone requests a sample, that can be three or five or 10 pages, but a partial is usually a chapter, maybe two or three. It depends on the size of your chapters or what someone wants to see. 50 pages is also a good guideline. And you want to start at the beginning. You don't want to start somewhere in the middle, because again, that strong opening sentence and opening paragraph is something really important that people are going to want to see. And yeah, just, you know, clean and professional and in the submission guidelines sort of format.
Right.
And that's it. Just chop out the, cut and paste out the first few chapters and you're done.
Perfect. And of course, the manuscript, I think, is pretty self-explanatory. You're actually looking for a completed manuscript, not, you know, here's the first 20 chapters. Oh, by the way, I'm finishing the last ones next week.
Right. Yeah. If you're finishing the last ones next week, then send it to me next week.
Yeah. 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 Don't be in a hurry.
Right. Part of it is also with showing that you can make a compelling ending and tie up all those loose ends. Part of it is also showing that you have the discipline to sit down and write 80 or 100,000 words, which is a lot of words. And if you've got a really strong start of a couple thousand words, but you can't prove that you can follow it through, then you're not ready to show it to somebody yet. Right. You need to have the whole thing, even if you're not going to show them the whole thing up front, it needs to be done.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Are there any other pieces to the submission package, I guess we could call it?
If you have credentials, then you should include a paragraph with your related credentials. But this is where a query letter kind of differs from a job application, because it should only be the relevant credentials.
Right.
It's not like a job application where we need to know where you live and your current job and where you went to school and what degree you have. In a job application, you totally need that. When you're submitting, if it's not relevant, then we don't need to see it. We need to see things like if you're previously published, then we want to see that. We want you to include the titles and publishers in the letter. You're not bragging. You're just listing out your experience. Please don't make us go researching you and digging for it ourselves.
Right.
If someone lists that they're published, but they don't list their previous publisher, I get suspicious.
Right.
Like they're not proud of their previous work, or there's something wrong there, or there's something weird there, or if I look for it, I'm not going to find it, sort of thing. So, you know, just like you would list where you've worked before, list your title and your publisher. And if you want to, the year, I don't, seeing how recent something is, if it's recent, is good. But seeing how old something is, if it's not recent, can work against you, just like in a resume.
Right.
What else? Relevant education. If you've been in writing workshops, if you have a degree in a field relevant to your manuscript, if you have relevant life experience. We have a Dragon Moon author named Chris Jackson, whose book Scimitar Moon just came out and had its release at Dragon Con. That's a sailing pirate novel. It's got a big nautical theme, and he's been in the Navy and lives full time on a boat.
Right.
So that's relevant experience to mention, because that way we know we're not going to have to go fact check all of his nautical references. We can pretty much assume this guy knows what he's talking about in that regard. Being in a major writing workshop doesn't necessarily tell us that you're good, but what it does tell us is that you've been trained by people who are good, and you've networked with people who are good, and you've networked with people who could potentially offer you good blurbs for your cover.
Okay.
So that's something your publisher wants to see.
Oh boy, I better start getting to know some important people for when I get a book out.
Network, network.
That's right.
Yeah, totally.
Favorite word.
One thing I also don't want to see is, and this is in a job application, sort of your first paragraph is, I would be a good fit for this job because, and then you throw in some BS and some buzzwords and, you know, and you sort of feel like that paragraph is compulsory. But opinion varies on this, but I don't like to see that. I don't like to see that in a query. I think if you tell me your genre and your word count, I'll know whether the book is a good fit. I don't need you to tell me. I don't need you to try to stretch and come up with reasons that you can tell me when the genre will tell me. One thing I hear a lot is this book would be perfect for Dragon Moon because it has dragons in it.
Well, and it's funny you say that, but I remember when Dragon Moon first started, and I don't want to tell you how old I am by that, but the original submission guideline. Yes, I was five. Yes. I was a great prodigy reader. No, and Gwen actually had in the submission guidelines would help if the story has dragons in it. Mm-hmm. She actually did do that, but yeah, no, I know that's not there anymore.
Well, even then, I think that elevator pitch is going to have the dragon word in it. If it has dragons in it, you don't have to list it out separately. And in theory, you would read the submission guidelines and the catalog and know what a publisher is looking for, and you would submit based on that. So you would have a dragon if they were looking for dragons, but at this point with Dragon Moon, it really only displays that you don't know the full scope of the material that we publish. And again, you know, even if we did say dragons only, you still wouldn't have to say that because we would just take it as fact. Well, if they're submitting here, either they have a dragon or we're not going to read them.
But, right. And you kind of alluded to a good point there. Research your audience. So know who you're submitting to and what kind of, I mean, it goes hand in hand with what are they asking for in terms of genre.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, don't tell me it would be perfect because it has dragons in it. And don't tell me it would be perfect because it has moons in it. And, you know, no dragons mooning people or the other way around, you know.
and it might even be good in that if you've written a book and it's, it happens to be a similar plot line to something that's already been done by Dragon Moon. That might give you reason to think twice about whether you should submit it again or submit it as well.
Right. Yeah. Well, you certainly don't want to submit anything that's too similar to anything that's already been published.
Right. Right.
You want to get that individual voice and say something new. I don't want to see in the credentials anything that has to do with you know, how long you've been writing or how long you've been reading or your day job or how many kids you have or anything that might look like it attempts to sway our favor or make us sympathetic, like how you've dreamed of being a writer since you were small or how difficult your child was or that you only have a certain number of months to live. You're laughing, but I'm serious.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if it's relevant, if, I don't know, if I'm not sure how a lot of those things could be relevant, but I guess if your day job or your educational background are relevant, then include it. But otherwise, the query is not the place for that. The about the author in the back of the book is the place for that.
Right, right.
You're not going to tug on anybody's heartstrings and make them publish you because you've dreamed of being a writer. You're going to get people to publish you because you write well.
Yeah. So that's what it always comes back to, isn't it?
It is. It really totally is. That's all it comes down to, is write well. And people say that querying is a crapshoot and that it's all random and it depends on what editor you get and what they had for breakfast and how bad their commute was. And I don't buy it. I think that's an excuse people tell themselves when they get a form letter and they don't know the real answer. I think that to some degree, personal taste is a factor. Yes.
Right, right.
But I think on a larger scale, good writing is good writing. And unprofessional, not ready yet, sloppy, you know, full of errors writing stands, you know, on its own merits too.
And I think,
or lack thereof. And I think that it comes down to how well written something is and how well it fits the requirements of that publisher. And I don't think that, I mean, I've worked with Gwen on submissions for a good while now, and we have pretty similar, you know, ideas on things. and we're pretty different people. So if I can pull something out of the slush pile and say, I think this is really well written, generally she'll agree.
Right.
And vice versa. And if something makes me cringe, it's probably going to make her cringe too. And if something needs a little more work and then I want to see it again, generally we're in agreement on that. So I think that there's personal taste and I think there's personal preference, and I get in trouble with other editors for saying this, but I think that good writing also stands on its own and speaks for itself, and that it's not really random. It's just, that's what you say because you don't know the real reason.
Right.
And there usually is a real reason, even if it's just, this was really good, but it's not what we publish, or it's too similar to something else that we have coming out in the fall, or, you know,
timing
or something like that.
Timing may just not be right, too.
Yeah. Timing may not be right, but it's never, I mean, I'm not going to completely do a 180 on my preference and my understanding of what Dragon Moon needs based on whether I slept on the wrong side of the bed or whether I had orange juice or coffee. I'm right. just not.
Right. And you had alluded a little bit earlier about the fact that this is a lengthy process. Sometimes it takes a while to get through a manuscript simply because there's so many coming in, or as you said, life gets in the way. Can you tell us a little bit about the process and what the big time sinks are in it?
It's sort of hard to generalize. On a personal level, I can sort of explain it this way. And I can say that the industry standard pace for editing, I also do work as a freelance editor, and I'm familiar with sort of the price charts and the industry standards there. The industry standard pace for proofreading and editing is about 5 to 10 pages an hour.
Okay.
And these aren't slow readers.
No.
This is really what it takes. So if I'm doing thorough edits on a 300-page book, it's going to take me a while. And if it's not my only project, it's going to take me longer. And if something comes up and the print schedule or the production schedule has to be changed around, or something needs more passes than I thought or involves more research than I thought, things that are already signed and slotted for production are going to take a higher priority than files sitting in the email that we haven't signed yet and have no obligation to.
Right.
And that's, you know, I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. It's a fact of life. It's, you know, you have to prioritize and you have to schedule, and getting the signed books out on time is the priority.
Right.
So in that sense, things can come up and things can delay submissions. It's sort of a matter of sitting down and reading through it and making a decision and sometimes discussing it and sometimes finding an opportunity to discuss it, or sometimes you just need to think about it.
Right.
So when you don't hear back, it's because publishing is like a really big forest and you're one tree in it.
Right.
And all you have to worry about is that tree. But as the publisher, you've got to worry about all the trees.
Right.
And, you know, there is stuff going on that, you know, if you don't hear from me, it doesn't mean I'm not working. It probably means I am working.
Right.
So, you know, you've got to understand that when it's time, when the opportunity is there to address your manuscript, it will be addressed. A lot of publishers have general timelines in their submission guidelines. They'll tell you roughly how long they'll take to respond. Whatever unit they have that in, give them another one or two beyond that.
Right.
Like if they say 3 days, give them 4 or 5 days. If they say weeks or months or whatever it is, you know, scale it likewise, because stuff happens. And, you know, sometimes you do send that thing to the wrong address and it just doesn't get flagged and doesn't get noticed because someone's been on vacation or on a business trip and comes back to 50 emails, and they, you know, take all the ones that are flagged and put them in the submissions folder, and they don't see the ones that aren't.
Right.
So, and go ahead.
I was just going to say, and right along that, I mean, we're trying to treat this as professional as we can. What is a reasonable amount of time for someone to wait before they actually nudge you a little bit and say, you know, I submitted my book to you X number of months ago, and maybe even less, when's the good time to do it? How is the right way to do it?
Well, I think the when's the right time to do it is what I just mentioned. With the, if there's no guideline sort of that they give you, then I really don't know. That's much more a personal thing, where some people might feel that 2 weeks is bugging them. Some people might feel that 6 months is bugging them. I don't know. It depends on the individual, and you're never going to make anybody happy, because some of us don't like getting nudged about doing the dishes either. And, you know, and it's the same sort of thing. Some people just don't like to be reminded. Some people don't like to be nudged or pressured, or whatever you want to call it, even if you're not doing it in a nudging or pressuring way.
Right.
So there is always a chance of animosity when you do that. However, I think you should.
Right.
And I realize that I'm setting myself up for a ton of it when I say that, but I still think you should, because I've heard horror stories about people whose full manuscripts have been on somebody's desk for years, or whose manuscripts have gone on to be published somewhere else, and they still haven't gotten a rejection from this other place 11 years later. And I think that it is your work that's out there, and as a professional, part of your responsibility is the follow through.
Right.
In terms of how to do it, again, no matter how polite you are, you may still receive animosity from some people just because they don't like to be pressured or you know, reminded of things out of turn. But I think it was an honor to be able to submit to you, and I look forward to your response. Is a much more polite, low maintenance sort of query than, when do you think you'll get to me? Have you read my thing yet?
Right.
Sort of things that put pressure on for a yes or no answer, because nobody's going to want to write back if the answer is no.
Right.
And there's really no nice way to write back if the answer is no. You know, you can make excuses and say, I've been really busy, or I have other priorities, or, you know, wait your turn. But there's no really nice way to say it. You just kind of have to fudge and say, yes, I read that just this morning, in fact. And, you know, and everybody knows that's, you know, not coincidence.
Yeah, I'll
say that nicely. I'll just edit myself right there and say, not coincidence. But, you know, and they know that your reminder nudged them, but they're just not going to tell you so.
Right. So polite and really non-aggressive is the right way to go.
Yeah. And not passive aggressive either. Really, no. Actually non-aggressive.
Non-aggressive. No, you're polite, and you're just asking, and you're not pushing them into forcing a decision on them, I guess.
Right. And just to clarify, passive aggressive would be something like, I know you're really busy and I hate to bother you. And, you know, if you hated to bother me, you wouldn't have hit send.
Yeah.
So that's passive aggressive. Don't do that.
Thank you for the clarification. Now, is there anything else on this topic that I haven't asked you about and that you think needs to be talked about?
Just, you know, write a really strong query and don't stress too much about the details, and don't stress too much about response time.
Right.
I know that's impossible. I know that firsthand that's impossible, but I don't know. Do you have any other questions?
No, I think you've really given us a really nice, clear picture of the whole process, and I don't think I have any other questions. When I'm I'm really, really happy that we had this chance to finally talk, and you've done such a great job spelling it all out for us in friendly terms. So thank you so much for your time tonight. I really appreciate it.
Well, I think it can be a friendly process. I don't think there's any reason why it doesn't have to be. I think people get nervous, and the reason people get nervous is because there are unknowns.
Right.
And you don't know what somebody wants, and you're trying to send this thing out there into the ether when you don't know if you're getting it right or not. And basically, if you just follow the guidelines that each individual gives you and don't sweat the rest of it, you'll be okay. Just, you know, try just hard enough and don't try too hard.
Right.
And use common sense and be professional. And you don't have to query somebody to ask them if you can query them.
Right.
You know, if they have submissions set up, then they welcome submissions. And send it along and be professional just like you're applying for a job, because really that's what you're doing. You're just using your manuscript as your resume.
Right. Well, thank you for that great advice. And thank you again for your time.
You're welcome.
Hello there. My name is...
Han Solo. I'm Captain of the Millennium Falcon.
No.
Lisa Corjata Binks.
No.
Ben Kenobi?
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
No.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
No, Indiana Jim.
The princess?
No. The princess? She's here?
No. Princess, no. What's going on?
The intrepid archgeologist.
I recognized your foul stench when I was brought on board.
Well, that's not very nice. Look, would you just let me talk
for once? The ability to speak does not make you intelligent.
Hey!
I am wondering, why are you here?
I'm here to invite you to listen to my podcast, The Adventures of Indiana Jim.
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Look, we talk about sci-fi and fantasy books and movies, creative writing, and what's hot in the world of podcasting and new media.
I knew that you were going to say that.
I also have interviews with authors and even talk a little football every now and then.
Are you slimy, double-crossing, no-good swindler?
Who says you can't be a geek and a sports fan?
Where are you taking this thing?
Oh, right. Podcast.indianajim.net.
And that's our show. If you'd like to leave feedback, comments, or questions, you can call the voicemail line at 206-339-1258. Or you can send me an email at feedback@getpublishedpodcast.com. Send me a friend request on Facebook or friend feed at Michael Plested. That's M-I-C-H-E-L-L. Or follow me on Twitter at mplested. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, work hard, never give up, and maybe you too can get published. Thanks for listening.
Get Published is an Irreverent Muse production.